His head is the most fine gold. His locks are bushy and black as a raven. His eyes are as the eyes of doves by the rivers of waters, washed with milk and fitly set. His cheeks are as a bed of spices, as sweet flowers. His lips like lilies, dropping sweet-smelling myrrh. His hands are as gold rings set with the beryl. His belly is as bright ivory, overlaid with sapphires. His legs are as pillars of marble, set upon sockets of fine gold. His countenance is as Lebanon, excellent as the cedars. His mouth is most sweet, yea, he is altogether lovely. This is my beloved, this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. They say, whither is thy beloved gone, O their fairest, O thou fairest among women? Whither is thy beloved turned aside, that we may seek him with thee? She responds, my beloved is gone down into his garden, to the beds of spices, to feed in the gardens and to gather lilies. I am my beloved's, and my beloved is mine. He feedeth among the lilies. Again, the Song of Solomon is made up of two main characters, a man and a woman, or a bridegroom and a bride. We see them in a variety of scenes throughout the book, and they are seen in love with one another and throughout the book and in communion with one another. So it's a story of love between this man and this woman. It is a picture of the Lord's church and Jesus Christ. That is a picture also of ourselves individually and Christ. It's called the Song of Solomon. And that's what our lives ought to be. Our lives ought to be a love song of ourselves and Christ. And we are telling that story as we live our lives upon this earth. But in our text, we see in verse 8, this woman is in a state of love sickness. She says, I am sick of love. What that means is because of her relationship with him, because of her love for him, she can't stand the thought of being separated from him. She can't stand the thought of the fact that she had failed him. And we see that in the first part of the chapter, the first seven verses. So she's saying, if you see this one that I love, tell him that I am looking for him. This, of course, prompted the daughters of Jerusalem to ask her twice, what is thy beloved more than another beloved? Why is he, what's so special about him? How is he better than others? What is it about him that makes you so passionate? They're saying, why are you so set upon this one? Then in verses 10 through 16, she answers their question by giving a description of him. And she's describing him, and we want to look very briefly at her description. We're not going to go into details, but first of all, she describes him in regard to what he is in himself. She mentions there in verses 11 through 16, 10 of his features. She mentions his head, his locks, his eyes, his cheeks, his lips, his hands, his belly, his legs, his mouth. The point being is that she knew him very well. She knew details about him. Now, if we were to preach from those verses, I believe what she's doing is she's describing his deity. She's describing his humanity. She's describing his dominion, his thoughts, his knowledge, his wisdom, his strength, his dignity, his perfection, his sweetness, his tenderness, his peacefulness, his compassion, his grace, his work, his incorruptibility, his faithfulness, and his speech. But the point is she speaks as one who knew him well. And we need to always ask ourselves, how well do we know him? Not how well, how much do we know about him, but how well do we know him? And that ought to be increasing by the day. She also describes him in regard to others. Verse 8, they question, what is thy beloved more than another? Notice her reply in verse 10. She says, my beloved is the chiefest among 10,000. So she elevates him far above the rank of men. She says, he is better than all. He is superior to all others. He is distinct from all others. There's nothing that we can compare. He's predominant. He is the foremost one. He is supreme. He's the most significant one in my life, she is saying. He's altogether lovely. He's the chiefest among 10,000. He's greater than anyone. He's more eminent than anyone. He's more illustrious than anyone. He's more powerful. He's more impressive than anyone else. He's more amazing, more awe-inspiring, more capable, more beautiful, more wonderful, more desirable, more enjoyable, more worthy than all others. You know, we're often asked this very same question. What is thy beloved more than another? Well, they don't ask it in those exact words. But they may ask, why won't you come to the family reunion? Why do you pick church over the family reunion or whatever? That's the same question. Same question, just in another form. What is thy beloved more than another? And she goes on and she says, my beloved is the chiefest among 10,000. With those words, she's saying he's unrivaled. He's unrivaled. He's unparalleled. He's incomparable. There's none like him. There's none like him. If you take the very best, she is saying he's better. He's better. That's still true today. You take the very best in your life, and he's better. She's speaking as one who knows him well. Again, how well do we know him? She describes him. She gives a summary. She says, yea, verse 16, he is altogether lovely. That kind of summarizes everything she said prior. He's altogether lovely. There's not a person in the world that you can say that about. Everything about them is perfect. Everything about them is wonderful. But you can say that about Christ. She says, all that is in him is beautiful. All that is in him is perfect. He is all that is lovely. And there's nothing unlovely about him. No matter what angle you look, there's nothing wrong with him. He's perfect. Yea, he is altogether lovely. I believe at that point she's come to an end of her vocabulary, and it's as if she's saying, what more can I say? He's beautiful beyond words. Again, this is one who knew him well. How would we describe Jesus Christ? She also describes him by personal relevance. She says in verse 16, "This is my beloved, and this is my friend." There's a relationship. With those words, she's saying again, he's the one that I most adore. He's the dearest to me. He's my friend. That is, he's my companion. He's my confidant. We see also there was a bond of fellowship and closeness. There was a harmony. Chapter 6, verse 3, "I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine." She's identifying herself with him. How closely do we identify ourselves with him? So she gives a description of him. Notice her demeanor in describing him. She speaks personally. She speaks for herself. She speaks readily. No wavering. She speaks with absolute certainty. No second thoughts. She says, "My beloved is. His eyes are, his cheeks are, his hands are." And on and on she goes. She speaks with absolute certainty. He is the one that we ought to always speak of with absolute certainty. He is. She speaks as one who's very familiar with him, very well acquainted with him. She obviously has spent some time with him, and she describes him. The ones who can give the best description of Jesus are those who've spent time with him. The ones who have the best knowledge of Jesus are the ones who spend time with them. She speaks as one who has personally experienced this one. She speaks of him in the present tense. As you look at her description, everything is present tense. Everything about him is present tense. There's nothing in the past. It's all present tense. What that simply means is that he's a reality in her life. He's real. He's real to her. She speaks as one who is completely focused upon him. Again, you look at her description in verses 11 through 16. His, and on it goes. She speaks with absolute certainty and conviction. She speaks as one, as she describes him, eventually she comes down to, he is altogether lovely. So she speaks with excitement. She speaks with enthusiasm and passion, all leading to, yea, he is altogether lovely. But my point is this. Her description of him ought to parallel us in Jesus Christ. What we read here ought to be a picture of us in Christ. And we must be able to speak for ourselves, not have a mouthpiece, not have someone speak for us, but we speak for ourselves. And like her, we ought to be able to speak for ourselves concerning him. We ought to speak for ourselves as one who is very, very well acquainted with who he is. As one who has personally experienced his person, as one who has spent time with him. When someone asks you a question about Jesus Christ, how whatever form they want to put it in, the questions come all the time. Do we speak as one who is well acquainted with him? Do we speak as one who has personally experienced him? Do we speak with certainty and conviction? You know, people will call and they'll ask, do you know Brother so-and-so, Pastor so-and-so? Yes, I do. Is he sound? Well, last I heard, he was. Last I knew, I haven't seen him in 10 years. I haven't heard from him in 10 years. But last I knew, he was. Can't guarantee he is, but last I knew, he was. That's not true of Christ. He is. We can speak with certainty. We can speak with absolute conviction. And we can speak with great passion. Jesus Christ is my beloved. He's my God-provided lamb. He's the offering for my sin. He's my high priest. He's my one and only mediator. He's my advocate with the Father. He's my righteousness. He's my reconciler. He's my Savior. He's my refuge. He's my rock. He's my foundation. He's my shepherd. He's my model. He's my example. He's my peace. He's my relief and my solace and my hope and my joy and my song. He's my victory. He's everything. He's everything. Oh, may we speak for ourselves as one who is well acquainted and one who has personally experienced Jesus Christ. And may we say with great certainty and conviction, Jesus Christ is, right now, the chiefest among 10,000. There's a lot of God's people, or at least those who profess to be God's people, who cannot honestly say that in their estimation, he's the best. Because their life says something else. Their life says he's not even in the top 10. He's more to me than anything else. When she says he's the chiefest among 10,000, she is saying he is more to me than anything else. He's more to me than a spouse. He's more to me than children. He's more to me than a career. He's more to me than anything else. That ought to be true of all of us. We can feel the intense feeling that she has when she says, this is my beloved. This is the one that I love. She's declaring this. She's declaring this publicly. This is the one that I love. This is a personal and real love for Christ. A love that draws us to him. It's not a love that takes us from him. It's a love that draws our hearts and souls to him. It's a love that thrills our souls. It's a love that causes us to want to submit to him in all things, making him the priority of our lives. It's a love that makes us sensitive to him and consecrated to him. It's a love that fills our life with meaning. This is my beloved. This is the one that I love. This is the one that gives my life meaning. This is the one that I live for. Oh, may we speak for ourselves as one who is well acquainted with Christ. one who has personally experienced Jesus Christ. And may we say with absolute conviction, this is my beloved. This is the one that I love. This is my friend. This is my closest friend. This is the most loving friend. This is the most caring friend. This is a constant, faithful, wise friend. This is a prudent friend. This is a rich and able friend. This is a proven friend. Jesus Christ proves himself every single day to you and I. Again, in chapter 6, verse 3, she says, I am my beloved's and my beloved is mine. There's a union. There's a closeness. There's a harmony with him. They are synchronized with one another. They're together in life. So as you read these verses, she's absolutely captivated with this one. He is her world. What is your world today? What makes your world? It ought to be Jesus Christ. He's our world. He's our world. People will say often, my whole world has fallen apart. Not if he's your world, it hasn't. He was her life. He was her everything. Is that so with us? He's our everything. He's our life. She's absolutely convinced that he is the best. And again, in a state of euphoria, she says, yea, he is altogether lovely. Is that so? Is that so with us? Again, she's involved in a very close relationship with him. He is the one that I love. He's my delight. He's my friend. Is that so with us? How do we describe Jesus Christ? If someone were to ask you to give a description of Jesus Christ, would you just describe him theologically? Or could you describe him from a personal relationship, from a personal experience? We ought to be able to explain him theologically, but we've got to have more than that. Knowing him theologically will not save your soul. Knowing him personally, it's what saves your soul. Knowing him theologically is not what gives your life joy and meaning. Knowing him personally and experiencing him personally. And I believe we have many in our churches that know him theologically, but they have no knowledge of him personally whatsoever. Reading through these verses, you cannot help but sense she has deep, deep feelings for him. The woman in our text serves as an example to you and I. The daughters of Jerusalem refer to her, chapter 5, verse 8. Chapter 6, verse 1. Whither is thy beloved gone, O thou fairest among women? Verse 9 of chapter 5, they also referred to her as the fairest among women. She was different. They recognized that she was different. And our character should give weight to our profession. If we say that we know Jesus Christ, that ought to be seen in our character. That ought to be seen in our life. If we say that we love Him, that ought to be seen in our character, in our life. They could see that she was different. Oh, thou fairest among women. And then they asked her, what is thy beloved? Thy beloved. What is thy beloved more than another beloved? She spoke to others concerning her beloved. And her passion for him was troublesome to them, because they said, what is thy beloved more than another beloved that thou dost so charge us? They were offended that she would so charge them. They were troubled by it. And again, as we speak of Christ, it'll be troublesome to many. The daughters of Jerusalem, again, twice in verse 9 of chapter 5 and twice in chapter 6, verse 1, they referred to her, they said, thy beloved. In other words, they recognized that she loved him. Do people recognize that we love Jesus Christ? They recognized that he was first in her life. They don't have to understand it, but they need to recognize it. That we love him. That he is first in our life. Family may not understand it. Family may get angry. They may be offended. But they must be able to recognize it. They ought to be able to see in our life. And eventually it sinks in. But they don't even ask. They stop asking after a while because they know the answer. But if you're always doing something different, you're not consistent, they're always going to ask because they always know there's a chance. There's a chance that they'll pick family over church this Sunday. There's a chance they'll pick family over the Lord this Sunday. So we're going to ask. Again, even the most ignorant after a while figure it out. There's no sense in asking. The answer is going to be the same. That's a good testimony. And they recognized that she was first, that he was first in her life. And oh, may those who come into contact with us always recognize that Christ is first to us. In answer to their question, she said, my beloved is, without reservation. And in answer to their questions, we need to answer without reservation. I choose Christ. You mean you are going to choose Christ over family? That's what it should be. That's what it should be. Over friends? Over a career? Over a good paying job? That's what it should be. Sadly, that's rare today. But that's what it should be. She answers without reservation. She answers without fear. She answers with absolute certainty. My beloved, may this be us. The daughters of Jerusalem asked in chapter 6, verse 1, whither is thy beloved gone? She answers, my beloved is gone down into his garden. They asked a question concerning him. And what did she do? She directs them to Him. She points them to Him. And that needs to be us. When they ask their questions, we need to, in our answers, point them to Christ. Point them to Christ. Doesn't matter what the question is. They might be asking a question about the end times. Whatever biblical question they're asking, Jesus Christ is involved. So, point them to Christ. Answer their question, if you can, and point them to Christ. And if you can't answer their question, point them to Christ. But that should always be our goal. That should always be our end. Point them to Christ. Even the world, lost man, is curious about end time events. And they figure out that you go to church, they will ask, well, what about this and what about that? Point them to Christ. Point them to Christ every time. Don't leave Christ out of it. And that's what she does here. She just points them in the direction of Jesus Christ. Again, she's an example to us. May we not be ashamed to give a description of Him. May we not be ashamed to declare Him to the world, to declare Him to anybody. May we not be ashamed. May we speak with conviction when we're asked questions. Every one of us here that are saved, we've been asked questions by co-workers, by relatives, by acquaintances, by neighbors. If you live any kind of Christian life at all, you're going to be asked some questions. You know, people say all the time, well, I just don't have many opportunities to witness. That's just not so. You just don't recognize them. But every question is an opportunity. Every time someone makes a remark is an opportunity to bear witness and to point people to Jesus Christ. And all of us can certainly do better in pointing people to Christ. And all of us certainly can do better in taking advantage of the opportunities that we do have. Perhaps we need to pray that God would just give us the wisdom to see opportunities, to see the opportunity when it's there, because it's there. It's there often. But we often fail to declare Jesus Christ. May we never, ever be ashamed to declare Jesus Christ. Brother Jim, if you'd come and